Blog Talk Radio.
Sound Talk Live, where professional stylists, barbers, makeup artists, and nail techs give you the 411 on the good, the bad, and the ugly of everything you want to know about natural hair, hair weaving, makeup, nails, education, products, and more. Real talk. It's what you've been waiting for. Shop Talk Live. Good, bad, the ugly.
To have my special guest today. Kingpin turned author Jimmy L. Townsend. Good morning, Jimmy. How you doing?
Good morning, everybody. How y'all doing this morning?
Everybody's good. You have been on a few podcasts, and most of the conversation was leaning towards Marjorie and Steve Harvey. Marjorie, of course, your ex-wife. But we are here today to talk about your book, Snakes in the Garden. But we do have some curious people that want to know, who is this guy, Jimmy Townsend, that is all over social media, and how is he associated with Marjorie Harvey?
Well, you said curious. You know, curiosity killed the cat. But anyway, no, as far as Marjorie, that is my ex-wife, who's now married to comedian Steve Harvey. And, of course, Marjorie is, I must admit, she was a love of my life once upon a time. But as you know, I did 27 years in prison, and that kind of separated us. Not kind of, it did separate us. And, of course, that's what prison is designed to do, is to break up families and separate you from loved ones. So that's what happened between she and I. So anyway, that's that.
And you have two children with her, though, right?
We do. I have a daughter who's now, she's 37, and a son that's now 30. And of course, she has another daughter, Lori, and that's the story in itself, because you know how the social media is. They got Lori being my daughter and Morgan being Steve Harvey's daughter. I mean, you know, everything's just mixed up on social media. So, but now I have two kids, Morgan and Jason. And, yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about Snakes in the Garden. What inspired you to write this book?
Well, actually, Deborah, what inspired me, you know, as I just said, that I did 27 years in prison. So, of course, in prison. And be mindful, though, I've never had any formal training in writing or anything. So, basically, the book was a miracle. And what really inspired me, in answer to your question, is that having all this time, and I guess I just something just entered my mind that, let's see, can I write my life story? And I did, and be mindful also that even in prison, all I did, I didn't watch television. I was not a TV watcher. I didn't allow TV to control me like it did a lot of the inmates. My thing was that I focused mostly on reading, and I read novel upon novel, and in my Bible. That's basically what I did. And every now and then I would watch. I think out of the 27 years, I think I can count on both hands how many movies I watched in prison. I did watch football, you know, during football season. And that was basically it. So, and answer your question, what inspired me, that was it. I just, you know.
I read the book, and it is based on the autobiography of your life, like growing up and your life as mm-hmm. a, you know, drug kingpin, right? Mm-hmm. Your mother, Annie Lee, she left you and your brother Leroy at an early age with a family member because your father, Jim, was an abusive, you know, husband. How did that affect you?
Well, as you read the story, without telling you, you know, the whole storyline, but just think about it. If you just really thought your mother had abandoned you and at an early age, and I think I was 5 going on 6 years old, and, of course, Leroy was 3 going on 4. And so, my mother, she, just in rural Mississippi, to be mindful of that. And as you said, I had a very abusive father, and it was nothing but domestic violence between me and my mother. And, but in her mindset, when she abandoned us, and I hate to use the word abandon us, because she really didn't, her whole mindset was being an old country woman, you know, and borderline illiterate, her thought was to leave and go and get a job in up north in Chicago, mm-hmm. And then come back and get me in New York. But during that time, something dramatic happened in our life that we didn't see our mother for 7 years without telling you exactly what happened. But that's what happened. So yeah, but actually, she hadn't really abandoned us. That was just her mindset to go and come back and get us. And it didn't turn out that way.
She basically wanted to keep you two safe, so she left you with a family member and so she can, you know, get everything
she did.
Together to
she
come
did.
Back for you. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, grandmother, yeah. And she left us with her. And they were so old, they didn't know what was going on. So my dad, being manipulative, he figured out a way to kidnap us. Oops, I told y'all what happened. My bad. But anyway, yeah, that's what happened.
So where are you originally from?
I'm originally from Mississippi. I was born in this little country town called Ruleville, Mississippi. And it's like in the Delta part of Mississippi. So I know a lot of people don't know about when I say Delta. Well, the Delta part of Mississippi is it's just strictly flat land. You can stand and see, you know what I'm saying, see straight, no hills, no mountains, no nothing. That's the Delta part of Mississippi. And then, of course, in Mississippi, you got some, you know, mountainous areas. But, yeah, that's the Delta in Mississippi. And like I said earlier, I was going on 6. 6 years old when we were kidnapped. So I keep telling you.
So in Memphis, that's where you met this guy, Lonnie B, who became your best friend. How did you meet Lonnie?
Yes.
I said, how did you meet Lonnie B? He became your best friend.
Oh, Lonnie B. Yeah, so when we ended up in Memphis, you know, by my dad, I already told you what happened as far as being kidnapped. So anyway, I told you that part, the intriguing part. But anyway, well, that's how we ended up in Memphis. And, of course, my dad, he didn't want us, really, he didn't want us, and he actually kidnapped us from my grandparents just because evilness, you see what I'm saying? He didn't want us, but he didn't want our mother to have us. And so... So his mindset was he kidnapped us and took us to Memphis and left us with his sister, which was our auntie. And be mindful now, I'm 5, just turning 6. And
so in the book, when he kidnapped you, he basically kidnapped you and Leroy with some candy, wasn't it?
Yeah, you're going to tell everybody everything. You're going to tell the whole
thing. I'm not telling everybody everything. Believe me, it's a whole lot more than what I'm saying. It's a whole lot more.
Oh, yeah, I know. But, those are the most intriguing parts that we're dealing with. So, and people really love that part, how I wrote it. But, yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, because, that's what happens. That's how he got you. That's how he kidnapped you with candy. Well, actually, Leroy.
Yeah, he lured us with candy. That's true. Basically me. Yeah, he got me. I was a sucker for candy. So, yeah, that's how
he knew that.
Yeah, he knew that. And so in answer to your question, you asked me a question about Lonnie B, which became my best friend when we did arrive in Memphis. We later became best friends. In fact, this little quaint neighborhood that we lived in, I don't know if you ever been down south.
No.
You ever been in Memphis? No?
Mm-mm. No.
Anyway, it's a quaint neighborhood. The little streets are...
I'm a city girl.
About wide as a sidewalk. You know, you got your neighbor across the street. You can take about 10 steps and you're across the street, to your neighbor's house. But it was a really lovely neighborhood. And Lonnie D lived right across the street from me. And like I said, we became best of friends. He was a year older than me, so we were basically the same age. And as you read, you'll see that... not only is he my best friend, he taught me so much because I was, as I say, country. I was country than a row of corn, so. And he had enough finesse because he was you consider him a middle-class family, because his mother, his grandmother, but his grandmother was raising him and his cousin. But, yeah, me and Lonnie became real tight, and as you read, you'll see what we went through.
So he was so good. I mean, you guys were really good best friends. That he also went to Memphis to go to Chicago. So he left Memphis to go to Chicago with you, right? Or you went with him?
No, actually, Lonnie B's mother, like I said, his grandmother was raising him, and his mother lived in Chicago. So actually, that is why we ended up in Chicago, but we went together. So you would say we went together, but really he had been in and out of Chicago because every summer he would go and stay with his mother, right? But I had never been to Chicago. And as you read the book, you see we went on a train. I took my first train ride and to Chicago. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I go on to tell you how.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I didn't want to tell the whole story, because like I said, I read the book, but I did find a few interesting topics that I hope you don't mind talking about, such as that coin collector job at Belltel and that mini affair with Doris the Cougar. But do you mind talking a little bit about that job?
You know what? Probably a lot of you younger listeners. I don't know exactly the age group of your listening audience, but probably a lot of them won't even know what a coin phone is, a pay phone is, and that tells my age. But anyway, yeah.
Well, it'll tell my age as well because I know the pay phone booths and stuff and all that. I know the coin collector.
So, of course, during that time, there was no cell phones or nothing like that. So, payphone was really on every corner, in every tavern, in every grocery store, gas stations, you name it, it was all over the place. So. And so, of course, they needed coin collectors. Yeah, they needed coin collectors to collect the coins out of the paper. And so, as you read the book, you'll see how.
Listeners have to get this book. You have to read about the coin collector job that Jimmy had. You wouldn't believe the end of it. Because I didn't believe it.
Yeah.
I didn't believe, you know, like I said, I don't want to tell the whole book, but I found that very interesting, and I also found the steamy affair that you had with Doris, which was the cougar. I mean, could you just let the list tell the listeners just a little bit about it? But it's very, it's
okay. I'll give you all this, a little tidbit.
That's to make them, you know, want to get the rest of it.
And as you know, it gets real kind of raunchy. Doing it. I'm 16 years old at this time, and Miss Doris is about 30, and she's and I think most of the audience might know what a cougar is, as far as an older woman.
Today they know what a cougar is. Mm-hmm.
But well, for those of you who don't know what a cougar is an older woman that how can I put it, Deborah, that you know, just really love her.
Oh, that like younger men.
Younger men.
Older women
that
like young men.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And so Miss Doris, she seduced me at 16 without telling you going in detail, but you got to read it and see exactly how she did it and what she took me through. So actually, you know, at a very young age, I was... I guess Ms. Doris made me a man from a sexual perspective. Okay. Yeah, that's it.
The last thing I'm going to ask you about the book, because she was very, she was in your book for a while, and I think you were in love with her. But how did you meet Bobby?
Well, Bobby, that's when Bobby and I met Bobby in Chicago. It was like I just said, Ernie B., when I was telling about me and Lonnie B, how we ended up in Chicago. But so that's where I met Bobby. I think Bobby was like just 16, turning 17. And she became...
How old were you at that time when you met her?
I was only 60. But you know, that's a story in itself too, Deborah. Because I had no idea.
That's why I brought
it
up, Jimmy, because it is a story in itself, and it's something you want to get the book to read.
No, yeah, most definitely. That's very intriguing, what she took me through at a young age. And I think I was, 6 years old, and she was. But she was very streetwise for her age and had been through a lot, as you said. As you know, you read the book. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Bobby was she was on top of her game at 17, really 16, because she just turned 17.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she grew up very fast. Mm-hmm.
So, what about this here club? I was laughing at this club, Cling Dingbat. What is that, Club Dingbat?
No, back in Chicago, on the north side of Chicago, Club Dingbat was a real popular club. And it was, and it had, a mixed crowd as far as racial. And it was top class, you know. It was it wasn't your average hood club, you know. Actually, and it was on the Gold Coast of Chicago. And you basically had to have money to go and party there, you know. And as you know, as you read the book and dealing with the coin collection and all like that, I had plenty of money. So, yeah.
And you had plenty of women.
Why you had to throw that in?
But tell me this. Yeah, because I had to. Because how are you going to, you know, okay, I'm going to tell them, Michelle, the eldest one, how are you going to bring her to a club, to the same club that, you know?
No, I didn't remember. You mean how?
How are you going to bring Bobby to the same club that meet Michelle frequent?
Because I was stupid.
You know, you don't bring your girl to a club that you know your other girls are going to be at.
Well, you know,
and that's
time,
why you
know,
got to get the book to see what happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I was laughing. I was like, I was like, okay. Yeah, that's why you have to get the book, because you want to read what happened with Bobby and Michelle. Okay.
Yeah, most definitely.
So,
I would say, you know, I was just young and when you're young, really when you're young and having money, then you get a little arrogant, you know, and prideful, I guess, you, and then I guess bottom line gets stupid, you know, and that's why I did some stupid stuff. Being young and then, you know, southern raised and now in the big city, you know, with plenty of money. So, you know, I didn't have, you know, no guidance or nobody to really, you know, talk to me or encourage me or whatever, you know, to tell me don't do this, that ain't going to work and all like that. I had no kind of mentor in my life. And especially at that time, I really needed somebody because I was buck wild. Mm-hmm. You know, from that perspective, not doing nothing stupid as far as that would land me in jail at the time, no. But go ahead.
Well, we're going to take that break, and we're going to go from that part where you got landed.
Okay.
Where it landed you in jail. Okay. All right.
Okay. Good.
Are you looking for a women's empowerment conference near you? The 2023 annual Hershey Women's Empowerment Conference, founded by Tanja Nunnally, will be taking place on October 21st, 2023, from 2 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. at the Stadium Hotel in Miami Gardens. Our powerful guest speakers include Life Coach Ebony McNichols, Mental Health Counselor Jennifer Palmer, and Activist Christina Neptune. For more information, please call 954-549-5822. Again, that's 954-549-5822. See you there.
It's your time to shine once again. The highly anticipated competition hosted by Beauty Elements is back. People's Choice 2023 Fall Edition. Submit your photo and video to participate. Four different categories. Free, Fantasy, Destiny Wig, Weave. $3,000 in prizes. Submit now for your chance to win.
What are you drinking? Introducing a choice that's just as unique as you are. Still and sparkling water by Royalty Spring Water. In a world of choices, some things remain refreshingly simple. At Royalty Spring Water, every drop is a reminder that you deserve the best. So, what are you drinking? Order yours today at www.royaltyspringwater.com.
We're back with Jimmy L. Townsend and Snakes in the Garden. So, Jimmy, October 21st, 1991, you were sentenced to life in prison without parole. How did you feel when you heard that verdict?
You know, this feeling, in fact, I wrote exactly how I felt and what was going through my mind at that particular time. You know, to get have an imposition of a sentence of life without parole, you can only imagine that. That's basically a death sentence, because without parole, that means you, the only way you come out of prison is in a box. So you can only imagine, and getting that sentence without, even when I think about it, you know, it was a life sentence that, for a nonviolent crime. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
That's
like you didn't murder anybody. Mm-hmm.
So what now?
I said you didn't murder anyone.
No, that's what I'm saying. It was nonviolent crime. And actually, it was conspiracy, dry conspiracy, if people know, meaning that there was no actual drugs presented at my trial. All the drugs that I got was what they call ghost dope. It was from a testimony. No drugs was at my trial.
From a snake.
Yeah, that's why the name of my book is Snake in the Garden. And as you read it, you'll see why it was that title came into my mind, yes.
And it's a couple of snakes, not just one.
All I can say is that when I received it, that devastating sentence of life without parole, my inside looked like everything had just, it was just emptiness. I can't put it in words how. Only thing flashed through my mind that I was going to be in prison for the rest of my life until death. So you can imagine how I felt.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Though you spent 27 years in prison, but then you had plenty of time to think. So
I did. And to write my book.
Right, exactly. If there was one specific thing you would change from your past, what would it be?
From my past?
Yeah, if it was one specific thing.
That's a no-brainer. I wouldn't have sold drugs.
I would never have got
into the drug game. And trust me, and I want your audience to know, even when I migrated, that's when I got into drugs. I was 19 when I went to Chicago. In my mindset of going to Chicago, it was never in my mind that I thought I would end up being a drug dealer. I did not, because actually I went to Chicago to try to find a better job. Remember, I'm 19, and we talking about in this fight for civil rights era, during that era with Martin Luther King and fight for our civil rights. So, it was my mindset to leave the Jim Crow era of Memphis, you know, where you done graduated from high school, now you trying to find a job. Your jobs are far and in between, very scarce. So my mindset was to get out of racist Memphis and go up north and get a job. I didn't mind working. So I tell everybody my mindset wasn't.
But how did you get involved in drugs? How did you actually get involved in drugs? In selling drugs.
Well, that's a story in itself, and really, you know, that goes in detail. That's going too much in detail to ever take a minute to tell you that. So, but what I'm saying is, you have to read the book, and you see how I ended up. Like, I'm trying to get your audience to see that it was never my desire or my ambitions to become a drug dealer. It just happened. When you read the book, you see how I fell into that trap of selling drugs. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So let's fast forward to the day you were granted clemency by President Obama. Remember the first time I spoke to you, I was asking you basically how did you become one of the, you know, people to
recipients of a clemency.
Yeah, one of the recipients, yeah, to become.
Yeah.
And how did you go about that? I really like story of how you went about it.
Oh, well, you know, during that time, the Obama administration, they came out. It was based on Attorney General. That was his baby as far as trying to help those of us. A lot of people don't realize exactly what was going on in the judicial system. It was very unfair. And, you know, at that particular time, they had this war on drugs that came into existence by President Reagan. And they just went overboard with what they did as far as the sentencing guidelines. They structured that whereas they took the power out of the judge's hand and put it in the prosecutor, gave all the power to the prosecutors. You see what I'm saying? Under this new drug law. And so therefore they came up with the three strikes you out. Now when people really look at my case and see exactly, like I was telling you earlier, that ghost dope, there was no drug in my case, no physical drugs. And so, but under the conspiracy guideline that they had, and in this country is the only country that has a conspiracy law, whereas meaning that you can, even though there was no physical drug in my case, all of my drugs that I received, and I mean, I was a kingpin drug dealer, but all the drugs that was came about in my case was by word of mouth, you know? So therefore, you know how people, you know, to save yourself, you'll tell all kind of lies. You see what I'm saying? Especially if this is the person they really want. You know, they want you, but they don't really want you as bad as they want this, the kingpin. You see what I'm saying? So a person will tell all kind of lies. Yeah, so, I was given this in draconian sentence based strictly on ghost dope, which was a very hurting thing. Yeah. In your question, go ahead.
Tell the the story you told me when it was the last hour. I thought that was very, very interesting that you didn't think that you had received the clemency until that last hour. Remember you said it was a deadline.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Yeah. Speaking of the clemency, because your question, I think I didn't really fully answer your question as far as, you know, the clemency, because I was telling you about the protocol to get clemency. You had to the lawyer come in and do all the necessary paperwork, and then you have to write the president a letter, you know, no more than 2 pages, telling him why should he grant you clemency, which I did, and very poignant letter. And so bottom line, I did get clemency, I received clemency on the last day, at the last hour. The cutoff date was at 3 o'clock, and I think it was like 10 minutes before 3 o'clock that I was notified that I was going to get clemency. And yeah, that's why I said the last day, the last hour. But yeah, that's how I came from under that draconian life sentence without the possibility of parole through clemency under the Obama administration.
That had to be an awesome feeling. Like that had to just like, I probably would have fainted. That had to be an awesome feeling just to get that phone call 10 minutes before the deadline that you're going
to
be.
Yeah, because I had basically given up when they came and got me. I didn't even know. That's a story itself. You got to read that book to see exactly what happened. But let me say this. You know, you asked me when I first got my life sentence, how did I feel? And I was very descriptive in telling you exactly how I felt. But let me say this. When I received clemency, when they told me, I realized I had gotten it, I can't even put it in words. I can't even describe it. I mean, it was like, to this day, I can't describe the feeling that I felt, you know, when that burden had been lifted off me, that I realized that I wasn't going to have to die in prison. You see what I'm saying? And I couldn't even be descriptive of explaining how I felt, like I did when I received the sentence. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. 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 So what year was you released? I know you released October 21st, which is 2 weeks away from now. But what year was that? Was that 2017,
18? When I received clemency?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When I got out of prison?
Yes.
I got out of prison, literally walked out of prison into the halfway house. It was January 2017. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, just when I was
You've been a free man years. For 17
six going on seven six going on 7 years
going on,
right is that right
going on 7 years
about
7 years. So how have these years been for you since you've been out?
You know what, and that's when that third book comes into existence, man. I tell people, and this is the honest truth, I mean my transition from prison into, in my mind, only thing I could see, I was going to have this opportunity to now to be with, you know, all of my kids are grown up, 27 years in prison. So my kids are basically grown up, but now I got young, you know, grandbabies. So
yeah,
my mindset
exactly.
is, and even before I went to prison, my whole thing was I was family-oriented. You know what I'm saying? It was all about family with me. So I was elated to be getting out and going to have a chance to, you know, to bond with my grandbabies and all that. And in which at the beginning I did, but you know, the whole world turned upside down. Listen, it was more traumatic coming out of prison, the issues that I have dealt with, than going through prison. It was a journey coming through prison. I really did. I wouldn't say I would, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying I would trade going to prison as far as being out of prison.
No.
I'm not saying that.
No.
No, but I'm just saying.
No,
I'm
you just
telling
basically
you,
talking about the era, the time of it, like all the media and the computer, everything is the technology has changed.
Yeah.
I'm talking 27 years.
The whole world had changed for me. You know, when I went to prison, DVDs, I think it was just coming into existence when I went to prison in 91. So you got to realize in getting out, man, it was like, really, to me, it was like a caveman discovering fire for the first time with all this technology, and it was just overwhelming. I tell the story about when I first got out, when you get out of prison, okay, they give you, if you got money on your books, you know, when they let you out of prison, they give you a little debit card and put your money on it that you had on your books in prison, right? And so they give you a little debit card. So I go and tell everybody this is actually what happened to me. So I had got a friend. When I came out of prison, man, you know, I had friends that had given me a car and all this. So I go to this gas station to get gas with the debit card. And so I stood up. They told me I could use the card to, you know, go, you know, to buy my gas from the pump. I wouldn't have to go inside and all like that. So I pulled in front of this gas pump, and I stood there. I'm telling you, it looked like I stood there watching that gas pump, looking at that gas pump for hours. I mean, in my mind, it seemed like it took that long. I didn't have a clue how to use that card to make gas come out of that pump. You know what I'm saying? And this guy was sitting there patiently waiting on me, watching me staring at the gas pump. So he finally came on and said, man, what's going on, man? What's that? So I explained the whole dilemma to him, and now I've been locked up all these years that I didn't know how to use. So he showed me how to use the cards and all like that. So it was, I'm saying I was just that back in time.
Yeah,
you know,
you didn't know.
We're not going to mention these cell phones, these smartphones. Man, it was like, ooh, and I'm still working on, you know, learning about this thing. This thing is fascinating, the cell phone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Were the beepers out before you left, or no? No, you didn't even need to have beepers.
Huh?
The beepers. Remember the beepers?
You breaking up a little bit on me, baby. What'd you say that?
Okay, Do you remember the beepers?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, I used beepers during that time. You know, they was in existence, and, yeah, I used those.
In the drug game.
Yeah, that was very.
Okay. Okay, so you were able
to. Yeah.
So,
they didn't have cell phones. Huh?
Yeah, but they had those big old heavy ones.
Oh, yeah, they was clunky. They had kind of reduced them in size before I went to prison.
I think they were prepaid.
They were prepaid.
They were prepaid. Mm-hmm. I told
well,
you.
Well, I tell you what was really clunky. The first car phones that they had. You know, they were as big as a little suitcase. You remember that?
Yes.
You
had to have some money. I researched it.
Yeah. Oh, you did. Oh, yeah. Okay. Right.
No. I know it. I didn't research it. I know it.
You did. Sure did. But yeah. Yeah, but they had kind of reduced the beepers in size.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I was going to ask you this question when you were talking about the kids. How many children do you have in school?
Oh, I got actually 8 kids. Well, 2 of them are not biologically mine, but, you know, they know me as dad.
Yeah,
you
raised them. Exactly. So, yeah, 8 kids.
Mm-hmm.
And how many grandkids?
How many grandkids does it look like they did? So they coming up because Jason, my son Jason,
about.
Boy, he got the whole tribe by himself. He got 5 kids. And he only 30 years old. My son, my
really,
dang
Jason.
Yeah, this kid, this joker here.
The apple don't fall far from the tree.
You're right. He keeping the bloodline going, baby. Yeah, he got 5, and Morgan has 2, and I got 7, 8. 19, 11, 12. Got 12 grandkids and one great granddaughter.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but Jason got the bloodline going. He, you know what I'm saying? Fine. This boy, he'll have the babies every year. But, you know, but he can do that. He can do that because Marjorie, his mother, you know, spoiling right and taking care of all of them. So he good to go.
Yeah, you know that part. There's no doubt in my mind that this book is on its way to becoming a bestseller. What do you think?
I'm telling you, if it keeps selling like it's going, yeah, it will be on the bestseller list.
The sales are good.
You know what? Mm-hmm. Oh, very, very good. And, you know, it really surprised me. I really didn't think it was going to take off the way it did. I really didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't because I'm being real about it. It wasn't because of me. Nobody knew me. But it was based on Marge and Steve Harvey. It really was.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, and the book is really good writing. Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you a quick stuff. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to tell you that the book is definitely a good book, and it has a cliffhanger, which means that there has to be a continuation. I mean, is another one coming out?
Oh, most definitely, book two. I mean, as you know, like you just said, it's a cliffhanger because when you read it, you know, there was no way in the world I could put my whole life the way I wrote it. It's 400 pages to this book.
In one book, yeah. I believe it's 39 chapters. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right.
Like
you know, short chapters, not that very long. But I've been getting great reviews. I hadn't gotten a negative review on it yet. So, and everybody love it, and they're waiting for the second book. And, of course, let me tell y'all, you got to get this book now, for real. We're not telling it all,
because it's 39 chapters, and it's a lot of things in all these chapters. It's different things going on. Remember, this book is going from when you were 5 years old all the way up until now. So it's a lot.
Right.
What we're telling is just little. It's not even half of the book. Probably even a quarter of the book. You really have to read it.
No. Right.
To get everything in detail.
Yeah. And it is fast. It's fast paced moving throughout the book. Easy to read.
It's a book that you don't want to put down. Like when you finish one chapter, you can't wait to go to the next chapter because it's a continuation.
That's right. And you know the word for that is unputdownable. Because you can't put it down.
How you spell that? Unputdownable.
Just like I said, it's unputdownable.
Unputdownable. Okay.
Yeah.
So, well, like I said, there's no doubt in my mind that this book is on its way to becoming a bestseller. I want to thank you so much, Jimmy, mm-hmm. for agreeing to come on my show today. I wish you all the success in the world. I mean, not just on your book, but on your new life
mm-hmm.
with your family mm-hmm. and your kids and your grandkids and, you know, just everything in life.
Yeah.
I just want
thank
to wish you the best. And
was,
I can't wait to
pleasure.
the next book come out. You know, I know you're gonna keep me updated, I'm sure.
I will. And, you know, people, they pressing me now. They want this second book because, like you said, it was a cliffhanger. But it was a good cliffhanger. So, yeah, it'll be out real, real soon. It really will. And let me tell people how to get my book. Can I?
Exactly. Okay. Yes,
you can go to my web. You can go to my website, which is jimltownsend.com. It's just that simple. J-I-M-L as in love. Townsend, TOWNSEND.com. That's
okay.
it.
Okay, and they can get it in the ebook or the paperback, right?
That's right.
So people, I mean, listeners, you need to go there now. I'm telling you, it's a good book. I can't wait till the next book comes out. After I read it, I called Jimmy. I'm like, you know, when is the other book coming out?
Yeah, you did.
So. I'm waiting for the second book to come out. Now you're an author. Jimmy, you're an author now.
Yeah,
so
that's right. Y'all got
this.
I'm an official author. Y'all got to address me, Author Jimmy Townsend. That's right.
No more drug kingpin.
I forgot to mention, you know, because the good, the bad, and the ugly. That's a chapter in my book. this title,
Jay,
The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Remember I told you, Shop Talk Love, I mean Live, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, it's a chapter in the book. You really have to read about the good, the bad, and the ugly.
That's so, right, and, yeah.
So you gave them all your social media handles, how they can contact you if they need to contact you, your email address, your website. You gave them all that, www.jimltownsend.com. And Instagram, jim.l.townsend. That's your Instagram.
Right. Yes.
So you remember you got to put that jim.l.townsend.
Yeah. I don't know why they did it like that. But yeah.
Probably somebody else was on there that had that name already. Probably was another Jim Townsend. So you have to make it different. So,
I guess because my publisher, he did all that for me. So, you know, like I said, he's the technical genius behind all of that. So, you know, like I said, I'm still learning about this technology. You know,
okay,
old school, baby. Yeah.
All right, everybody, go to on Instagram and to jim.l.townsend and follow Jimmy. And, you know, let's support him in his you know what I meant to tell you, too, to throw in there? Because I had put it on my social media page as well, that a Caucasian man said blacks don't read. I even wrote a story. I had a magazine, and I wrote a story about that, blacks don't read. We need to start reading. Yes. I have the article, you know. And sometimes I don't want to say about everybody because there are black people that read. There are, but
of course.
Majority don't. They don't read. They look at pictures. Everybody wants pictures only. They read the pictures, not the story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know what, too? Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that, too, Deborah, because that was the only thing I did. I did want to put some pictures in this chapter. But unfortunately, when I was in prison, all of my Chicago pictures, I mean, all of them that I took in Chicago, and I had a plethora of bills, but they got destroyed by water damage. My mom had put them in a garage, and it leaked, and over the years, they just, you know, I hate that. I lost that, all those pictures, but I will have some pictures in my second book. I do have those, fortunately.
Okay.
So, yeah, I really hate that I wasn't able to, you know, put some in the first book, but that was the reason why.
Okay, well, I just wanted to mention that to the listeners that, you know, we need to read and, you know, we need to support each other. You understand? So, like I said, I read the book, so I can tell you about the book because I read it. And it is a good book, and it will be a bestseller. And we need you to go out and get the book. Like I said, www.jimltownsend.com.
All right,
thank you so much.
Yeah,
I appreciate you.
Thank you, and again, and I appreciate you listeners. Yeah, so yeah, this is a good way to start reading, kickstart your reading, get your reading stuff. It's a good way to go.
That's right. Join my book club. Yeah. You know, I have a book club. Join my book club. Okay, so we'll leave with that. Anything else you want
to
say?
No,
you
just want to say, Deborah, I thank you again. I thank you for just inviting me to your show. I enjoyed it. And I love you to the moon and back.
I love you too, Jimmy. Thank you again.
All right,
honey.
All right. All right. Bye-bye.